years, and it would be prohibitive to make the change.
Hansen then provided some remarks on the time it's taken for himself, as well as the foundation, to reach this point.
We've come a long way in 40 years of everybody working towards making change, and there's a lot to celebrate, and I'm incredibly grateful for the many champions and people who have actually taken up that challenge and implemented solutions. But it's also a reality check of, you know, the fact that we've got a long way to go. So this is an example of yet another barrier being removed. So let's just keep going. We're not over.
For those wanting to learn more about the Rick Hansen Foundation's Accessible Outdoors program, as well as how to book an appointment on the Everyone Everywhere vessel, you can go to rickhansen.com. Once again, this has been Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM, Burnaby. This segment would not have been possible without the continued support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative. You can also find this piece on frequencynews.ca.
This is Bird Note. Conservation photographer Napadol Pautong says that if you go out to take pictures of birds, you shouldn't just aim to take an eye-catching photo.
I think what different in my approach is that I know the subject I photograph. I like to watch the animal that I photograph, and sometimes I would rather watch them than photograph them.
By spending long hours in photo blinds and even sleeping in them overnight, Napadol has become deeply familiar with some populations of greater sage grouse.
To the point that I almost recognize each one of them when I look at their face because they have different markings in their face, missing few pieces of feather from fighting.
When dealing with rare and declining wildlife, keeping the well-being of the species in mind is crucial.
I think you should care about your photograph. You should care about what happened to the bird, why there's so few of them out there, you know. And that will make you much better photographer, make you much better conservationist. Conservation images can alert the public to a problem, and I want my photograph to alert people to the problem and point to the solution.
And he wants to help cultivate the next generation of photographers to keep the mission going.
That'd be my ultimate goal, to inspire younger people to do what I do, because I can't do this forever. I had a girl who was probably 10 years old send me a letter saying she wanted to be a photographer because of me, and she will continue doing conservation work because she believes what she does will make a difference. That means a lot to me.
Learn more about Napadol Pautong's photography on our website, birdnote.org. I'm Connor Geerin.
Welcome back to CJSF's Speak Up. I'm Jesse. Thanks to Danny for that report on the Rick Hansen Foundation's Accessible Outdoors program. And now, yeah, let's do a little bit more music before we get into our next and probably final piece of talk content for the day. We're going to go to the new record from Kara Bateman, who's also a local Vancouver artist. From her record, Daddy Issues, this track is called Cotton Skies.
And that's your greatest claim. You pick couch of prey, hope for a slow decay.
Cotton Skies by Kara Bateman from her new record, Daddy Issues, here on Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. I'm Jesse. Now I'm going to take you back to a conversation I had in February about a really great documentary called The Stand, which chronicles Haida resistance to logging on their traditional territory. At the time, it was playing as part of VIF. And now I'm playing it because it's coming to the National Film Board website and app in June. And I just thought it deserved another listen or two because I think director Chris Ochter and I had a really good conversation about the documentary, but also about the issues within. So we are going to hear from that, and then I'll come back and maybe we'll get one last musical break. But for now, this is myself and Chris Ochter.
Hi, Jesse. My name is Christopher Ochter. I'm a filmmaker, Haida filmmaker. My Haida name is Watsis Day, from the Yakalanis clan from Dawdins on Haida Gwaii. Like I said, I'm a filmmaker. I make films. I love to tell stories, both in animation, documentary, and beyond, I guess.
Thank you. And you're here because your documentary film, The Stand, is returning to the VIF Center Friday, February 28th. And this documentary tells the story of Haida resistance to logging on their traditional territories and the long, drawn-out process of that resistance and moving towards some sort of resolution. What drew you to this story?
Yeah, what drew me was my aunt and my uncle. They lived it. They were down there in Lyell Island fighting with the Haida. And yeah, I grew up and I knew they were down there. I was only 5 years old when it was happening. So I, don't remember. I didn't remember anything that. So I didn't know what happened down there, I guess is what I'm trying to say. So that was the beginning of it, was me wanting to honor my aunt and my uncle in some way, Michael Nicol Yacolanis and Shelley Hegeman, and thinking this was a really important moment in our history and I should know it and it would be great to know it. So that's where it started. And it was such a big pool to swim in because there was so much footage, which was great. Yeah, I'd amassed like over 100 hours worth of video and audio. Some things, like I was also looking for what was happening before this all happened so I could have some understanding. So I was listening to interviews and different people talking from times before. And yeah, it was fascinating. It took up, it was 4 years to kind of get to this point. But I had a great team with me, really talented. And I think we brought together something, I think, special. And I think it's a unique experience. And it's not a film that I could just turn around and, okay, I'm going to do another one just like that. Because it was just like, it was just such a unique opportunity to have this footage. A large amount of it was gathered from us, Susan Underwood and Donna Wilson. There were two filmmakers that lived here in the Lower Mainland, like around Vancouver. And they heard this was happening. The Haida were putting boots on the ground and on these logging roads. And they were like, this sounds important. We should get up there and see if we can film it. And the Haida let them in. They let them stay with them at the Haida camp. And I was told, because they were already thinking about the future, they were saying, we want people in the future to be able to see what it took and what we did down here. Which I thought was so amazing because, you know, the generation or so later, myself, that's what I was doing. And I needed this, like, mm-hmm. to be able to understand.
There's so many things there just to pull apart. One, the footage itself is really, really riveting and astounding to see, like you're saying, the level of access that was provided and how embedded the videographers were. You capture some really intimate moments, some moments of strategizing ahead of going out to the protests, all these things that, yeah, it would be hard to imagine how you would tell the story without some of that.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And to grab those nuances was just so important as well. And to be able to, because then the audience could start seeing inside and understanding the people that were there and kind of feeling for them, like we do as when we watch a film, we start feeling for the characters that mm-hmm. are on the film. So it gave us a chance to understand them and to relate. And also it was so important for me to not insert myself in there. I kind of did with Mouse Woman a bit because I was thinking that the supernatural beings were there helping the Haida. And the supernatural beings are such a big part of our culture. And I think what the Haida were fighting for. They were fighting for the survival of our culture. And it was important for me to let them tell their stories, the ones that were there and were captured on film, for them to explain why they're doing it now, why they're there, what it's all about. It came from the best possible sources. It came from the source. And they were just so well-spoken as well, so articulate.
Yeah, one of the things that stood out to me from some of that behind-the-scenes planning footage is how aware of strategy and how aware of the process that they were going through. I'm not sure who says it, but at one point they say, we're in the theater business now. Yeah. And as you said, they knew that it was worth letting these videographers in to preserve it for the future. I was really impressed by the level of awareness of how to do what they were doing. Do you know where that comes from?
Yeah, totally. No, you're making great points there. And that's one of my favorite lines of the whole film mm-hmm. is, you know, we're in the theater business now. That came from Gujow or Gary Edenshaw, who had become, he became the president of the Haida Nation after Miles Richardson, who's in the film. So then it was Gujow who was for many years. It was really well thought out in terms of we need the media to be here to spread the word so that it's covered on the news so that we could start getting other people behind us. And it's not just the Haida, then they're expanding the group that's behind them to go, hey, and being able to talk to the politicians and put pressure on them to talk to the Haida even. That's really what the Haida were just, they wanted them to have a partner to talk to and go, we got to figure this out. So they knew that was important. And my uncle Mike, when I talked to him, he said they could see when it was shifting, when people around BC or Canada were starting to get like kind of complacent about, oh, we've heard it, we saw it, and they start to on other issues. They would let there be a little bit of time, and then they would do something else that kind of caught people's eye and go, oh yeah, the Haida and what's going on down there. And even Jack Webster, like, he's amazing in the film in that it's so electric the way he just engages. And he's got this thunderous voice that just goes after people. And if they're going to survive, they got to go back after him in order to have their voices heard. But I think it's exciting to watch.
Yeah. Well, it pulls something out, right? Like it pulls the responses exactly. out. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was just going to say, like, I'm grateful that he covered it, and he covered it so expansively, even though, you know, he had his own stakes in terms of why he was doing it. But it was amazing, and I'm grateful that he covered it. Yeah, as I said.
Yeah, and I think that also it's emblematic of throughout this action, I guess, the political action, the protest, this recognition that the Haida were going to have to engage with the legal system. We're going to have to engage on the Canadian government or the British Columbian government's terms, even though to that point, any engagement on those governments' parts had seemingly been in bad faith or had not really worked out in the way that the Haida had hoped. And so there's this recognition and resiliency to be like, well, this is the way it has to be done, even though it has not worked so far.
Well, yeah, because there were talks before this, before they stood on the road, on the logging road. They thought they had a handshake agreement that the government wasn't going to extend the tree farm license in that area of Lyell Island and stuff because it had expired. And they said, nope, yeah, we're not going to green light and renew it. And then they flew home from Skidigit. And not much time had passed, and they renewed the license. And that, with the landslides, the Haida were like, okay, we got to get down there. It's getting crazy, and they're not listening. So they had to go, and almost because the governments weren't willing to talk and just hash it out, the legal system had to get involved, and the courts and stuff like that. And the courts were saying, like, this isn't a court matter, like, solve it politically. But then the government would appeal that decision and go back through the courts. So it just became locked in the courts. I'll just say this because I remember just earlier what we were talking about. Also, another great inspiration for the Haida, that's my uncle. And he said it was Gandhi himself as well in terms of the root of nonviolence. So I thought that was pretty interesting as well.
Yeah, to be sort of sourcing global inspiration for this very, very local resistance.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I guess I want to talk a little bit about the film itself. You said earlier that you were aware of this, you have family connections. In going through all the footage, did you learn anything? Like, were you surprised by the story that unfolded?
Yeah, I mean, I learned so much. And I mean, I was so intrigued with, like we were talking about earlier, kind of those behind the scenes moments where they were practicing for what they think was going to be happening on the road. And they had Sven Robinson, who was an NDP MLA elected, there with them. Yeah. And who's also a lawyer. So he was able to say, oh, this is, you know, how it's going to work and stuff like that. And kind of, you know, let them know so that the Haida could practice it and kind of, you know, this is where we're going to stand. This is what we're going to do. But it's just the way that they were talking. It just felt so rare to be able to peek into those moments and go, oh, that was what it's like. And that's what's going through their minds. And yeah. So, I mean, like the whole thing I learned pretty much, right? Like the whole thing was a learning classroom for me because I just started out with the point that I knew my aunt and uncle were there. And then I don't know. I didn't even really know what the area looked like. Right. Like, and, what the Haida camp looked like and Frank Bevin's camp and stuff like that. So all these things were new for me because then when things interest me and kind of piqued me when I was first learning about it, they're those homing devices where you go, okay, let's red bold this. I think other people are going to be really interested and fascinated about this as well. But I mean, it was so fascinating. I remember trying to piece together because I was asking the questions too, like, why are the Haida doing this now? And like, why not earlier? Why now? What do the Haida want? What do we want? So it was so fascinating when we're sitting around the fire and listening to an elder, Ethel Jones, speak. And she says this, and it's in the film, you know, like, well, you know, we're here. We're not sure what's going on, but we're here. And then the way they talk too, and saying, you know, like, I think that's why we're here. It's you know, it's about land claims, and you know, I think that's the whole point and stuff like that. Like, just the way that they're talking, it was just so reassuring too, to know that they're putting this all together too, and it's not a boom, we know everything all at once and here it is. Like, it to know that it's organic and it's growing at the same time, that was really fascinating to me as well. And like I said, like with that, going back to the rehearsal night, it was just so interesting to hear why they did the rattles the way they did, and to have it explained by Gu Zhao, you know, why they had the paint and stuff like that, why they were wearing the paint. Like, those things are fascinating to me. And they're expressed in such a human way, in that it's not perfect and it's not super, like, even though Gu Zhao, like, he's a great speaker and stuff like this, but I wanted to show that he was searching inside of himself for that answer as well. And it wasn't just a ready, here's the script and the perfect words, like, you know, like,
right. Yeah.
I think that's fascinating.
Yeah, well, and that even though, you know, as we were talking about earlier, there did seem to be strategy and planning and an awareness of what to do, they didn't necessarily, you know, consciously know all those things before starting, right? That those were sort of revealed to them through the process in a way.
Yes, yeah, exactly. And we could do that in so many different ways. It's the same way with making a film. You don't know the whole thing going in. You kind of slowly coming to you as well. So, yeah.
With the benefit of hindsight, I think you can look at this instance of resistance as maybe not a template, but as an example for future instances of Indigenous resistance and land defense, thinking about the Kanastake resistance or the Wet'suwet'en. Does that resonate with you? Do you think that this inspired others?
I think it did. I spoke with my Uncle Mike, and he said this sort of thing wasn't really done before. And like, the RCMP, loggers, the government, the courts didn't know how to deal with this because they hadn't seen it before. It was all new, and there was no playbook on how to handle this situation. And I think it couldn't have been handled in terms of the RCMP's case in a better way. Like, Inspector Harry Wallace and his team, like, they had just had so much respect, and the lines of communication were open. And I think, you know, the Haida were given respect, and they were getting it back as well, and even from the loggers as well. So I definitely think that we can all learn from this, which is why, you know, going back to that hidden story, like, I don't think, even though this footage has been shown a little bit in quite a few different shorts, and there was also another documentary made in the year 2000 that had Susan Underwood as a part of the creation crew in this, but it was Ravens and Eagles. I think it was Athlie Gwai. But I don't think, like, in terms of, like, this film is in terms of showing, like, it's almost like we're witnessing and we're standing on the road with them, and we could see it unfolding before our eyes. And yeah, I don't think a lot of people have seen this before, and especially in this way. And I think it can be RCMP, people who are trying to stand up for a cause that they strongly believe needs to have change, and can look at this and go, oh, that's really fascinating. We could learn a lot from this. And because that's what we say about history all the time, right? Is please, let's learn from it, so we're not stumbling over the same stone time and time again. So, yeah.
For audiences who are interested to come see the film, what do you hope they take away from watching The Stand?
Well, I think definitely there's lots that we could pull in terms of that learning. I think there's a lot that we could take from seeing another culture and being able to relate to them and going, oh, they're like us. And, mm-hmm. or, you know, I think there's that love and respect that comes. And I think that the film, I think, encapsulates the message in the song at the end that plays during the credits. So if you come and watch the film, like, I hope you'll, yeah, and enjoy that song. I think it's a powerful song, and I call it Ada's Message. And yeah, she was an elder that was there, but I think that's what I'd like people to pull from it.
Great. Well, thanks for taking the time to sit down with me, Chris.
Yeah, thank you, Jesse. I really enjoyed this.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the film. So I heartily endorse going out to see it starting this. Oh. Yeah, no, go ahead.
Yeah, oh, sorry. Yeah, you saying starting to, and it goes all the way till March 20th. We have screenings all the way. So there's like, I think it shows 8 different times at the VIF Center. So
yeah, lots of chances to get out and see it. So that's great.
Yeah, thank you.
Cool. Thanks, Chris. My interview with Chris Auchter, the director of The Stand, which, as you heard, was playing through February and March at the VIF Center. Now you'll have to wait just a little bit longer to watch it on the National Film Board website, nfb.ca. That is coming in June, so you can check that out along with all the other great stuff they have. This is Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. I'm Jesse, and Democracy Now! Is up next, but we have time for one last song, so we're going to play new music from Kimmortal, who is an amazing multi-hyphenate artist, Filipina artist from here. And this track features Shad and Frankie. So enjoy. This is Sunniest of Days by Kimmortal.
Thanks for your breath and acknowledge the land. Remember those who did not get a chance. The story's not over, the plot can advance. I feel the fresh air walking in Vans City. I'm walking in Vans. I take them off and I hop in the sands and handle biz with vision and purpose, mission and service. Embrace pain and celebrate the good. No mechanic, but we elevate the hood. Take a look, try to put things back the way it should.
On the cloudiest of days, I feel lost inside of
Daniel, I play guitar and sing in Dead Soft.
Since moving to BC, I've been a huge fan of Emily Carr's art.
I wrote a lot of it on the road. That was our first real tour.
What role do you think time plays in transforming something into art?
We've arrived at sexual maturity as a band.
The Arts Show, every Thursday from 5 to 6 p.m. right here on CJSF 90.1 FM.